You're listening to Wins Above Fantasy, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network with Van Burnett and Steve Gisuelli.
Welcome back, everybody. It is Wins Above Fantasy, episode 58. Steve, we're in June. Exciting times here. And this is usually when you kind of get stuck looking at the roster, the waiver wire, and you either want a change of scenery or you're trying to, you know, go out and wheel and deal a little bit in the league. So today we are dedicating a full episode to the art of trading in fantasy. We'll talk some names. We'll talk some philosophy. I know you got strong opinions here. I think we've all had negative experiences of seeing a trade proposal and you check it out and you're like, this is absolute trash. We're going to talk about it all, but super excited to be back on. Kind of a looser show, so we can zig and zag where we feel, but thank you guys for tuning in. We are, of course, part of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. You can find us every Thursday morning on the main Pitcherless feed. Follow us at Wins Above Pod. I'm at @Van_Verified, and Steve is at @Stav8818. Steve, good to talk to you again. How's it going over there, man?
Yeah, June. Can't believe it. I think we're at like the quarter point of the season or third way through the season. Something crazy. Goes way too quick. But yeah, we're at that time, man. Like I just noticed like in like the Discord today for Pitcherless, like in like the fantasy help section, it's like you see more and more comments that are like, you know, I'm starting to think my pitching staff isn't going to cut it, or like I'm starting to think that like I really need some help for speed or power. Like you can make real assessments on your team, and people are starting to do that, and with that comes trade. So it's trading season. Like it's no longer, oh, it's only April, or oh, it's only been 5 weeks. You have a good sample, you know what you need, and the way to get better, obviously, you know, there's more than one way, but I think probably the best and quickest way to improve your team is through trades, especially at this point. Like, you know, I think you put in the notes, and I was just talking to a buddy offline, like the pop-up guys are, it's over. Like for the most part, they're scooped up. They already happened.
Right.
We got to make some deals, man. We got to make some deals now.
Yeah. And it's definitely something that I think most managers would agree. Trading is not utilized as often as it is enjoyable, which is kind of a weird statement to make, but like people get so excited about when they see trades go down in the league. The thought of completing a trade or being part of a trade is definitely exciting. Of course, there's kind of some, you know, paranoia that you're getting beat by a trade, or there's kind of this paranoia that it's just not a fair deal.
Could I have gotten more? Did I get ripped off?
Like, exactly. Yeah. Hindsight, looking in the rear view. But like you said, it's also just a drastic way to impact the future of your season and really your team build, because everyone walks away with a draft or walks away from a draft with kind of in the back of their head, like, you know, I got a great staff, but I could use some power or different things like that. And then it really is like this revolving door for the first 8 weeks of the season, trying to catch lightning in a bottle. And you probably added a couple guys who have worked out, but to really change the makeup of your team, there's no way to do that in greater fashion than with a trade. And I think that probably leads off to kind of our thought process on it, which again, I know we typically break down a lot of guys. We've got some names on the back half of this show, but Steve, let's have a conversation here in the spirit of making a deal. And let's just talk about it, man. It's like, how do you go about making a trade? And what are your thoughts overall about maybe the issue that happens too often when it comes to a lack of trades?
I think the biggest issue and the reason why trades don't get done, and like sort of the negative connotation with it, is that I think too many times people are trying to win a trade. Right. And, you know, there's sort of a thought process that's like, all right, let me start with this ridiculous offer and come in completely lowballing and like, oh, but I'm willing to go to a certain price, but let me start here and see where we can meet, and we'll meet in the middle. It's like, no, do not there's nothing worse than getting an offer that you can't press reject fast enough on.
Right, or it's a like, screenshot. If that comes in, screenshot and send it to your buddies.
If that comes in and, you know, with the expectation that you're going to, like, negotiate and meet in the middle, I'm not doing that trade with you, and no one should do that trade with you. It's an absolute horrible mindset. Even to come in at 80%, I think that's still ridiculous. Come in with a fair, good offer that you're willing to do. And I think that way, you know, it could be approached in sort of good faith, and you're able to figure out, you know, what that person wants and how you can help each other. Like, it should be mutually beneficial. Be reasonable. Like, there's nothing worse than getting an offer, you know, that doesn't even take 2 seconds to think about. I think it's a horrible way to approach things, and I don't think that there's really anything to be gained from it. Like, you're just trying to you're trying to, you know, get the person to do a stupid move. Like, that's what it is. And, like, you're acting like you're smarter than them, or trying to get a leg up on them in an unfair trade. I think it's a horrible way to go about it.
Yeah. And even if there is, you know, cause there's naturally, like, I'm interested in buying low here, or I'm interested in selling high here. I still think whether it's that school of thought or just like filling a positional need or a statistical need, I think communication is such a big part of what I've found useful, to where if you just fire off a trade, a lot of times nothing, I mean, and this assumes you're not in a public league and you actually know the managers a little bit, but to me, I've always found it really useful to just be above board and kind of send out an initial message of, you know, hey, I know Stanton's been red hot, but, you know, X is struggling and his underlying stats look great, so I'm willing to take a discount because Stanton's been hot lately. Just kind of stating your intentions and starting the dialogue.
I think Sporer mentioned this. Paul Sporer over at Fangraphs mentioned this in a recent episode. It's like, if you're buying low, like, let the person know that you're like, hey, like, I know this is a buy low. Like, I'm trying to buy low on X. Like, I'm trying to buy high on Y. Like, be upfront. I think that's such a good point.
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, that's a good point on just buying low. And I think another part of it is kind of where the team standings shake out. And you know, if you are looking at a guy who's got Whit Merrifield, and, you know, just to throw a name out, of course, underperforming so far this season, but a lot of people know that, you know, Whit Merrifield more than likely is going to be something similar to what Whit Merrifield typically is. And you can go look at his stat cast and you can look at underlying numbers. Sure, at this point, it's not going to return to a typical third, fourth round value. But if Whit Merrifield is on the last place team in the league or second to last, you have a little bit more of a, you know, conversation piece to say, hey, I'm giving you an offer here that's going to get you production you don't have to wait on. And yeah, Whit might come around, but it also looks like you need pitching, or just starting to view their, it's really comes down to empathy of, like you said, kind of putting yourself in the other person's shoes and imagining.
Yep, that's my number one rule with trading. Would you do it if you were the other manager?
Yeah. And I mean, that's a good place to start. And I think from there, if you're doing, you know, some open communication, if you're being honest about it, and probably one of the most important things is just being willing to give something up, which sounds like a no-brainer, but I know you talked about this last year, and it's like, what are your thoughts on that element of it? Because there is that aspect of a trade where it's like, man, Logan Gilbert could get this deal done, but I was in on him and he's my boy and he's been good so far. Like, how do you kind of assess that aspect of it, of giving up valuable pieces in order to get something back?
If you want to get a good player back in the trade, when you hit that accept button or send that and it gets accepted, a little piece of you should, like, be like, you know, oh man, like, I just traded, you know, right, Aaron Ashby. Like, he was my boy all off season. I, you know, did a bold prediction on him. Like, you know, I drafted him in the right spot and it's been great. He's finally got a spot. But you know, it's part of a deal to buy lower-ish on like Walker Buehler or something. I'm just making it up. I know it's a name that we have on the list. Yeah. That down the road or down the rundown, but you should feel like you're, you know, you should feel something when you give something up, or else you're, you know, or else it's just a meaningless sort of ticky-tack trade, you know, kind of like if you want to get someone good and actually make a splash and change your team and try to improve, like there should be a feeling of, you know, a little bit of buyer's remorse, right? Like that's how it should kind of feel a little bit when you do a trade. And another little tip and tricks I like to do, and this is more for head-to-head league. I know I'm in quite a few head-to-head leagues. You know, basically all my non like industry leagues are head-to-head. Keep track of the roto standings. I know my home league on Fantrax, it has it automatically. There's like a standings page that has like the season stats, and it's great. But if you're in Yahoo, do it manually. If you tweet me, email me, whatever, I have a spreadsheet that could automatically, you know, you just need to paste in your league standings and it could automatically update your roto standings. Tweet me if you want that spreadsheet. I'll send it over, tell you how to use it, whatever. But the point of that is, and the use of that is that you could see the categories that you're strong in or weak in, and other teams are strong in and weak in, and try to match up on a trade there. It's not as clear in head-to-head because, you know, it's head-to-head. There's not those standings there. But you could use this to say, okay, hey, I have a 20 stolen base lead. Like, you know I love Julio Rodriguez, but I could try and package him for, another guy on the rundown who's struggling a little bit for like a Vlad or something. Have, you know, Christian Walker, Julio Rodriguez, and like a good starter for Vlad or something like that. You know, like a Shane Bieber that you're worried about. Like, you know, obviously that's a lot, but you're getting a first round player back. I'm literally just making up a trade in my head, and I don't think that sounds too crazy because, like, I need power. I also have like Jorge Mateo and Tommy Edman, who have been great in speed. So I don't need Julio Rodriguez, and the team that has Vlad is last in steals, but still managed to have a lot of home runs. Like, I'm literally making up fake scenarios, but that's what you could look at by looking at those standings and simultaneously putting yourself in the shoes of the other manager. Like, I don't know, the guy, I think this could sort of be another topic. I don't want to ramble on too much, but I think 2-for-1 or 3-for-1 trades kind of get looked down upon, but there's ways to do it that make sense. And I think that using those tools is a way to do that, sort of those tips and tricks.
Yeah, that's a good point. And I think, you know, roster depth is kind of a, you know, an accompanying point there to where I think most people probably go to teams near the bottom of the standings, look for a trade for whatever reason. And if you do that, it kind of stands to reason that those teams probably need several players. Like, if you're going to do a 2 or 3-for-1, giving a guy in 12th place in your league 3 top 100 players and asking for a top 35, top 40 player, it's not outrageous because that's, you know, you're giving them some volume, some depth, some consistency, and those are the things I would bring up.
If they're in 12th, they're going to need help in more than one category or several categories. And I know that a lot of those top players are 4 or 5 category players, but if you could get 3, 4, or 5 category players that might not be, you know, first rounders, but are going to be 8th to 4th rounders next year, that's useful. And things can be done that way too. It shouldn't just be, oh, don't ever do 2-for-1s. Like, oh, are you trying to 2-for-1 me? Like, I know this, like, it's, you know, 4 quarters is worse than the dollar. And there is a lot of truth and merit to that, but I think that I think a lot of that comes from like the bad faith, like, oh yeah, look, I'm giving you, Christian Walker has more home runs than Vlad. Like, why wouldn't you do this? It's like, no, like, and I'm giving you somebody else. Like, it's Christian Walker plus, you know,
Julio Rodriguez,
whatever. Right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's like, no, that's not how it works. You know, because there is going to be a point where Vlad turns it on and provides that first round value. So you have to, you know, understand that it doesn't work like that, but you can do something that's fair, and you can do that by finding the other team's needs and putting yourself in that person's shoes and seeing if you would do it from the other end.
How much weight, Steve, do you put into StatCast underlying metrics when you're looking at trades? Because that can be something that, especially this time of year, you see a pop up on like the chat, the player chats, where people are like, oh yeah, we're the StatCast nerds now, telling me that this guy's a stud. He's gone 2 for 20 in the past couple of weeks. Like, is that, you know, a tiebreaker? Do you actively target it? Do you use that as a tool to kind of identify people who you want to go after? Or do you usually start with team needs?
I mean, I think it's a combination of both. Mm-hmm. I think I'll definitely use it to find a guy. I think the process sort of is this, to organize my thoughts here. It's like, all right, what do I need? You know, look at those roto standings, see where you're at in steals, power. Like, okay, in my home league, I am pretty good. Like, first in roto points. Like, it's not a roto league, but, you know, comfortable with my team. But my two worst categories are, like, homers and RBIs. So, like, therefore, I'm going to look for a guy who might be undervalued with a good barrel rate, or, you know, is moving up in the lineup, or batting in a good lineup spot, a run producing spot that might not be performing right now, but is projected to get, you know, a good amount of home runs. Like, I know I put this on the rundown, but it's funny that I traded for a guy at the time with zero home runs, but I needed some power, and I traded for Marcus Semien. The deal was Michael Kopech and Luis Urias for Marcus Semien. At the time, he had zero homers, but, you know, there were some underlying numbers there over the last 2 or 3 weeks, not even on the StatCast page, that, you know, provided some hope for Semien. And more so, it was like, okay, he's not going to finish with zero homers for the year. He had 42 last year. You know, he had to get used to this new environment, new contract pressing, and figure that out. I don't expect he'll come close to the 40 home runs he had last year, but I think it'll come close to 20 on the downside, which, you know, that's a big deal from June on for a team that's, you know, fourth from the bottom in homers. I had an excess pitching spot, and, you know, I said, okay, obviously Kopech for Semien is not going to get it done. Semien still was like a third or fourth rounder, whatever. I put myself in the other team's needs. Like, okay, I need a replacement for my shortstop, second base eligible player. And Luis Urias was just that. He's been good. You know, I still think I like Semien the rest of the year over Urias, which is, I think, a fair statement, but that's how I, you know, pitched the deal and, you know, ultimately the other team agreed to it. Like, it's okay. It's a replacement who's playing better than Semien currently. And, you know, I just had, a team that had, I don't know if it's Syndergaard or whoever else, and other few disappointing pitchers. And there was a need for pitching, and Kopech's been great. So that's how that deal came to fruition. And, you know, I'd said that directly, like, here's what I think your team needs. Like, these are the numbers to back it up. Like, I'm not, like, trying to be smarter than you or anything, but it's just logical.
These are the facts.
And yeah, it's the facts and a fair way to approach it, and just how sort of deals like that can come to fruition. And I think as long as you're reasonable and, like, understand where that other team's coming from, you can get a lot of deals done.
So it's a good point, good example. It kind of segues to the next topic I was going to hit on, is, do you have any rules? Because at the end of the day, you want to improve your team. And it's kind of in my school of thought that it can be a little bit harder to find arms this time of the season than it can be to find bats. I don't know if that's because of the likelihood of injuries with pitchers, if it has to do with kind of the matchups with pitchers and the fact that, you know, occasionally you're going to have a guy who's at Coors and you don't want to roll him out there. And I think it's part of the no such thing as a pitching prospect theory, you know, fresh off the show where we're talking about Roansy Contreras and all these guys. But I think the thought is that it seems like, you know, hitters, like whether it's, you know, Pavin Smith, Christian Walker, some of these that we've talked about, or even guys who just go streaky, I've always found it a little bit easier to find hitting production on the wire than pitching. So I'm a little averse to deal a valuable arm, but I'm curious your thoughts on that, especially talking about giving up a prize piece like Michael Kopech. Do you pretty straight up on those?
Yeah, pretty much, because, you know, I'm looking at what I have and see that, you know, I'm in the top of the league in all of these pitching categories. I have Jack Flaherty and Chris Sale on the IL, like waiting to come back somewhat soon. So why not deal from what's a strength? Like, that's how you find, you know, excess pitching. Like, go to the team that has by far the best staff, that has, you know, Aaron Ashby as their number five. Like, right? Like, if they have Aaron Ashby, that's found money because they drafted him late. It hit. Like, he's starting now. You know, that's another, I think, great way to find value. If someone picks up, you know, George Kirby and he's been great, like, that's found money for that team. And now they have another starter that you could go after. And it doesn't necessarily have to be George Kirby. There could be another guy, like, I don't know, whoever else is, you know, performing and now an excess arm. Like, you know, if they were stashing that Kirby in a minor slot, they now have a roster crunch, right? If, you know, Strasburg looks great and Shane Boz look great and they're coming back, like,
right,
those guys are going to have extra arms to deal from. And it's a great way to sort of, like, hey, let me help you out. Instead of, you know, you having to drop a guy, like, here's a way to consolidate. Like, I really like, you know, I really like Ashby. Like, I know he's been great. I know he was a great sleeper, but, you know, you got these guys coming back and he just, you know, carved out a full-time role with Peralta gone. Here's, you know,
Julio Rodriguez, I've got a ton of speed or whatever it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And here's, you know, I'll do a 2-for-1 where, you know, I'm taking 2 from you, you know, Ashby and your fourth closer, cause you're great in saves, for Julio Rodriguez or whoever. That's sort of the way that I think trades are born. Like, you got to pay attention to what other teams are doing. Watch the moves that they're making. Watch who's coming off the IL. Watch who's going on the IL. You know, in my league, we only have 3 IL spots, and, like, I have Wander Franco and Jonathan India sitting on bench spots. Like, you know, if someone would ask me for a guy who's on the IL like that because they have an IL spot, I would absolutely do that because that frees up a spot for me. Like, you know, yeah, sure, I would gladly sell, you know, Tyler O'Neill for 70 cents on the dollar because I need the IL spot and he's, you know, underperforming, or whatever, 60 cents on the dollar. Like, it's just a way to sort of do that. And, like, if I was another manager, like, I would be sending offers or talking for that, you know, with that owner all day. And I think another, to sort of circle back to sort of the overall concept, it's like, don't just flood someone's inbox with offers. Like, send a text, talk it out, send a message if you don't have the number. Like, even if it's, like, publicly, like, send a message, hey, you know, or, you know, this is just a preliminary offer, I really wanted to talk about that, you know, chat here. Like, I know Yahoo has, like, a talk about it button on the trade. Like, yep. You know, in your home leagues, you're going to have all these buddies' numbers, and in industry leagues, like, you know, tweet at the guy. Like, you know, they're in the industry for fantasy baseball. Like, of course they're going to want to talk trade. Like, it's a great thing to do. I know Ian Kahn over at The Athletic always talks about on Under the Radar how he's calling everybody up and has made lifelong friends from these phone conversations about trade. But, you know, I'm not saying you have to call everybody, but talk about it. Just talk about it, man. Like, it's so much easier, and you know, you're not going to offend anyone if you know what they want and can understand the needs and what they're looking for in a trade. It's just it's how things get done and how you're able to make trades. It's such a good a better way to negotiate a deal if you're actually talking to that rather than just sending over a deal and praying that someone hits accept.
Yeah, it truly spoken. And we will talk about several players because we've got to give some names, some advice, get into some player analysis. But first, we are going to take a real quick ad break and we'll be right back.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right, so Steve, it's a tricky transition to go from a philosophy that's so based on circumstances of your league and who's holding what and what your strengths are to go into player analysis of kind of like targets and buy lows and buy highs, because I think the overriding umbrella message on all of this is you want to be empathetic and put yourself in the shoes of other managers. You want to be mindful of where you are in position and standings and statistical needs, position needs, all that stuff. But we do have a list of names that are, at least can kind of jog or like, you know, spur more conversation around how you would set something up. So we jotted some down. Feel free to take left and right turns throughout. But the first one I wanted to look at is, in the spirit of returning off the IL, Willy Adames is kind of nearing the end of the ankle injury that he had. And Willy Adames is kind of in a weird spot for his season, because he's slashing just .208 on the average, .304 OBP, and a .462 slug, which is the bright spot. But it's been pretty underwhelming when you just think of like the .208 average, because of the fact that he's been on the IL. There's kind of increased likelihood that someone's either got a roster crunch or he's not coming right off of like a 2-homer game or an 0-for-20 drought or anything like that. So Adames is one that I've kind of like circled as an interesting guy as a shortstop. And the one that, you know, my thought process on this was, in my opinion, the arrow is pointing up on Adames because he's just got a .228 BABIP, which is bound to come up. His XBA is the highest of his career, still only at .266, so not like a world changer. Also the highest X slug of his career. Anybody who kind of drafted Adames has now kind of waited out this IL stint. But I think the barrels, the underlying metrics, right now he's 11th in the league in barrels per batted ball event. There's reasons to be excited about Adames. So right away, I looked up the rankings and said, who's a shortstop who's been performing better than Adames? So you can kind of balance out this, you know, buy low and be transparent about it. And the name that I kind of landed on as an interesting one to look at was like Dansby Swanson, who is ranked 51st on 5x5 league settings compared to Adames at 150. And Swanson has had a different kind of season as well, because he's batting .269, .333 OBP, .439 slug, 6 homers, but the 8 steals is really interesting for Swanson because his previous career high was 10. So it's safe to say he's well on his way to eclipsing that. But you know, how much is left? Like, I don't think anyone thinks Swanson's going to have a 25 steal season, but certainly offering more speed than Adames. there are signs of worrying for Swanson with like the 30% strikeout rate. That's the highest of his career. So when you look at these two names, same position, Swanson, you could maybe argue slightly overperforming, batting 270, eight steals, but still a pretty big gap on what they've done to date. They were drafted around the same range. How would you kind of view this as a starting spot, and what are some things you would consider for like a Swanson versus Adames trade?
I think it's a good starting spot. One thing I will say with the specific Adames example, I know he just had a setback. It seems minor. I think it was like a quad setback, rehabbing ankle. It you know, the ankle's fine, and it might just be you know, a few more days or another week or so. One thing that I don't necessarily like doing, just because like if I was in this shoes, like if I waited for a guy to come back off the IL and they're just about to come back, it's like I already waited all this time. I really don't want to trade him right now. I would kind of need to be blown away. It's just a very minor sort of tiebreaker thing that I would, you know, lean towards not dealing the player, just because it's like, all right, I waited all this time. Like, you know, sure, it's one thing to do it, you know, right when the injury happens, if you have an IL spot and can stash it, and you know, I'm in a tough place and can't afford to wait out an injury. But that's just sort of another mini little aside. But I think that, you know, a Swanson deal for this sort of works. It's like, okay, I know I'm selling a bit high on Swanson. You know, you got to be upfront about that. But I really like Adames. You know, how Swanson and this starting pitcher for Adames and your second closer, you know, I really need saves. You know, you're getting a good replacement at shortstop. You know, you're doing better in power, but need some speed. That's a sort of thing that I would absolutely consider and would definitely do if I was the Adames manager and needed some steals. You know, I know it's, you know, I don't want to say this is it's a tough topic because everything is so context and league specific, and we're making up these fake trades here. But that's how I would sort of talk it through and, like, you know, reason to myself, okay, here's why I should do this deal with, you know, someone coming in with an offer for their Swanson for my Adames.
Okay. Yeah. And I think, like, you know, when you, how likely, because the one for one is what comes to mind, do you feel like there's a higher likelihood on any trade of kind of, you know, the more pieces you put in there, the more balance there is? Like, do you see one for one?
So okay. Yeah, challenge trades are tough. Like, Adames for Swanson is like a straight challenge trade. It's like, no, like, I liked Adames more preseason. He was drafted earlier. Like, you know, I took him over Swanson for a reason. Like, you know, I know he's having a great year, but there is some holes in it, like you said. There's really not much reason to sort of do that. It's like, why would I just trade this starting pitcher for that starting pitcher, or that this shortstop for that shortstop? I think that the way to sort of do these trades, I guess, would be with like secondary pieces, swapping needs for needs. Like, right, that's how you have to think of these players. Like, you know, I'm as guilty as it for as anybody. You know, I love the players that I love and you know, and have emotional attachments to them. But when you're doing this, you need to think of these players as needs and ways to improve your team and help your team get better while also helping the other team. Like, you got to help the other team, man. Like, that's the only way you're going to get good trades done.
Steve, I kind of see a future for you as like a trade counselor. Like, maybe that could just be,
I mean, I do it all the time in the Pitcherless Discord, man. Like, I'm always in those help channels. Like, you know, someone was today talking about, you know, they're in 12th in the Dynasty League and they're getting a lot of offers for Manny Machado. And one of them was circled around Spencer Torkelson, and it was like Torkelson and like, you know, Justin Turner or a few other older pieces. It's like, no, man, like Manny Machado is, you know, one of the premier fantasy assets right now. Like, if you're trading him, I don't care what place you're in, like in a dynasty league, you need to get like a top end prospect. Like, I know Spencer Torkelson is up there, but like, and this was exactly what I said in the chat, like, you know, Torkelson's 99th percentile outcome is like kind of like Pete Alonso, which is like what, a third rounder. Like Manny Machado, if we draft today, like he goes in the middle of the first round, right? Like, you know, if not higher. It's like you're trading one of the best assets, and you need to, you know, be compensated fairly for that. So yeah, I kind of do that all the time and enjoy doing it. Like, you gotta. This is what you deal with. Like, you know, you see all the trades that happen on Yahoo or offers that are posted. Like, there's some bad offers and bad deals that are made. It's like, it's a really big market inefficiency, and you know, you got to, while also attempting to be fair, gotta make sure that you're not getting sniped yourself.
Right. Yeah, that's the plug to go out and sign up for the Pitcherless Plus, pitcherless.com/plus spelled out, and you guys can get in on the Discord and take your trades to the mediator, Steve Giswelli. But let's keep going through some names, Steve. Byron Buxton has, you know, the flag is in the ground. This is your boy. And Buxton managers, I would say, are among the top of people frustrated, looking for some sort of trade. And however you want to spin it, that is an opportunity, whether it's luck or just kind of the expected outcomes that are ahead, because Buxton right now is batting just 200. The 485 slug is good with 11 homers, just one steal. The arrow has to be pointing up. He's got a 188 BABIP, but I know very smart fantasy managers who are openly saying Buxton sucks, or I can't do this, I'm so tired of it. Yes, that doesn't mean that they're going to give him up for, you know, pennies on the dollar, but it starts to get into this realm of trade targets. So how would you approach kind of a Buxton offer? I've got a name I threw out here. It seems like it probably isn't enough for me, which is your first stress test of like, would you make that trade? But I'm curious, just opening up the floor on Byron Buxton and kind of where you see his trade value right now, because health is also another factor, despite or along with the performance issues.
Yeah, it kind of times out to like when that knee injury happened. Like, he was right, he was lighting the world on fire. Mm-hmm. And then had that scare. And in the past 30 days, despite hitting four home runs, has a 564 OPS. I would have never thought that, you know, if you told me Buxton on June 1st, as we're recording this, had 137 at-bats, was relatively healthy, you know, played, 36 of the team's 45 games. I would have thought my bold prediction of him being the MVP was close to being true. It was for a point, but, you know, not to ramble too much on the trials and tribulations of Byron Buxton. But, yeah, I mean, if I were the Byron Buxton owner, like, you know, I'm telling myself, like, Buxton is a guy who I want to put buy low on. Like, so, like, I already have that perfect buy low. I mean, what even complicates it even more is, you know, they're managing him. He's not starting every day. He's playing probably, what, 4 or 5 times a week max. I know he did just play both ends of a doubleheader yesterday, but then sat today. So it's tough. That being said, the name you listed here is Jared Walsh. Like, I would want Jared Walsh and like a really good starter to consider doing that. But if I'm, you know, if I have Byron Buxton on my team and like I have power and need a first baseman and an arm and I'm in eighth place, like, absolutely, I'm doing that. You know, I think it's a good start. So. Yeah, I'm hitting accept on a trade where I'm filling two needs, sort of for one with Bucks, and then like understanding that I'm selling for much lower than what you could have got for him when he was like, you know, lighting the world on fire, had 7 home runs the first 2 weeks of the season.
Yeah, I think the thing you mentioned there that I would note for a player like Buxton with the playing time questions and just the sluggish performance, if you will, or the underperforming of the metrics. If the Buxton manager is deep in the standings, it might be helping them to give them like a steady Eddie that's not going to light the world on fire. Yeah. Or, you know, look at the other players around them. I mean, if they're loaded with guys, you know, Luis Robert, just players that, you know, have kind of that volatility or injury concern, maybe they'd be open to, you know, finding some stability in their lineup. Even if they're not in 12th place and they're like hovering right around like the playoff mark. All of those things I think are what I would try to communicate. And to our earlier point, be transparent about the fact that you're buying low and just say like, you know, hey, I know, yeah, this is crazy that Buxton's, you know, batting 200. Definitely don't think that this is going to last, but it seems like you could use some instant production. Here's two or three guys if you'd rather, you know, some, you know, spread your investment a little bit.
Here's Jared Walsh, Jordan Montgomery, and a closer. Like, right? Like,
right.
Not a crazy, crazy offer.
Yeah. So, no, good to kind of talk through. And Walsh, I mean, you know, where we grabbed him, some of the thinking was drafted not too far behind Buxton, obviously not quite the boom bust option that he is. And he's been solid. I mean, the barrel rate's still 84th percentile. He's got 10 homers himself, batting 253, you know, OPS around 800, good lineup. I mean, there's, you know, that's not like a garbage player or somebody that you think is going to tank, but it's just somebody who, you know, might be a starting piece that you could pair with a few others. So
yeah, and like, I don't know, if you don't have a backup first baseman or something like that, like you're gonna be like, oh man, like I'm trading like my really good first baseman. Like, yeah, you should feel like that because you're getting Byron Buxton, right? Like that's how it should work.
Yeah, well, the next one, you know, this one is almost, you know, in the territory of add drop, because there's, you know, you can see some of these guys on the waiver wire, their, you know, rostership kind of fluctuating between like 70-80%. But I thought it was just interesting that Jake Cronenworth is still more rostered than Gleyber Torres. And Cronenworth has not been what you've signed up for. I mean, talk about a guy you counted on to be kind of a steady Eddie. He's batting 211 right now. We talked about on the chalkboard episode that if the average isn't there for a guy like Cronenworth, he's not going to light the world on fire with power and speed. So if he's not hitting for average, it's kind of like, where is he helping you? Even so, Cronenworth is rostered at a higher rate than Gleyber Torres, which kind of begged the question for me, who I've been a recent convert on Gleyber. All the underlying metrics look good. He's, you know, moving up the Yankees order. I mean, the arrow's pointing up. So this to me was like a, you know, buy on Gleyber over Cronenworth. And I was more surprised to see this, but you didn't like this school of thought for the trade, right, Steve?
Yeah, I think I'd much rather have Gleyber than Cronenworth for sure. You know, I think Gleyber is a great sort of target as, you know, I'm trading Altuve or Tommy Edman or like a top tier second baseman. Give me Gleyber and let me fill another need. Like, I think Gleyber is like that. You know, I don't think he's 2019, 38 home runs, 72 home runs versus the Orioles Gleyber. But I think he's back to being top 10 second baseman Gleyber Torres. So that would be sort of more of the school of thought,
rather than a challenge trade.
Yeah, for sure. Like Cronenworth, like, you know, it that would be the other way around. Like if like Tatis is coming back, like the lineup should be better. Cronenworth's not this bad. I want, you know, your, you know, number three starter and Cronenworth for Glaber, because, you know, you're sick of Cronenworth. I'm giving you a good second baseman. Let me get Cronenworth as my replacement for second base, and also, you know, your Jordan Romano, because I need a lot of saves or something.
Okay. Well, let me throw this one out, Steve, because I think this one's a little better. I was a little excited about this one. And it's all about kind of trading out categories where it's basically speed for pop. And I was looking at Harrison Bader alongside Jorge Soler and kind of interested in this one. Now, I feel like you could argue either side of this, but Bader so far batting 250, which in this league context is good, and Bader's kind of recent track record from a batting average standpoint, you'll take 250 Harrison Bader. He's got four homers, 13 steals has been the real bright spot. That's been enough to have Bader ranked 74th in 5x5. Then you got Jorge Soler. It's been a little frosty at the plate from an average standpoint, batting 226. But he had a horrendous April, just a 587 OPS. Really turned it on in May with a 939 OPS. I believe today he went like 3-for-9. He's got a trip in course. So Soler is surging. But Bader himself has hit 341 the past 2 weeks with four steals. So the arrow on both of these guys is pointing up. Soler hits in a better spot in the order. Bader in a better lineup. It all comes down to kind of steals and homers, but homers have been more scarce than in seasons past. So I think even that is a little bit more balancing out. So all of this kind of put together, to me, I feel like this one feels like it's a good starting spot. Again, I think Bader on the surface level, it looks more promising. I don't have Soler's 5x5 in front of me, but it's definitely not 74th like Bader. I think he's in like the, you know, high 100s or something. But give me the assessment on this type of a deal. Would you be looking for an additional piece, or do you think this is more in line with the type of deal you'd be interested in?
I think this is exactly the type of deal that I would be interested in making. You know, if you also have Tommy Edman and Julio Rodriguez and have this huge lead in steals and are just racking up all the steals, and you added Christopher Morel, who's already got 6 stolen bases, like, yeah, I'd absolutely do this. You know, it would be something that I'd be looking to do, like, in my home league, too, because I need a lot of power. That's a perfect sort of need-for-need deal that I think is, you know, essential to sort of target and a great way to help your team get better.
Okay. Well, let's talk about some buy lows, Steve. You brought up Walker Buehler earlier, and I want to just kind of bounce around here. Talk to me about Buehler, kind of what you've seen so far, and if this is someone, again, we were talking about, you know, do you look at your team needs? Do you go out and search for people who you think are going to turn it around? You said it was a hybrid, but Buehler is a name that you kind of brought to the rundown. So talk to me about what you're seeing here and how you would go about kind of a trade, because that's obviously a name people are going to be hesitant to part from.
Yeah. There's some concerns, like, especially if it was, you know, a manager that was analytically inclined that had Buehler. The K rate's at just 20%, which is, you know, low even for a guy that's not like, you know, this isn't like a Corbin Burns right. peak. Like he makes his, he, you know, his value is driven from pitching 8 innings with 7 strikeouts and 3 hits with no walks. Like,
yeah, a 5% K rate yeah. drop for like a Rodon isn't as crucial yes, as it is for exactly. like a Walker Buehler. Yeah.
Yeah. This percentage drops him from like a 9.7 K per nine to like a 7.2 K per nine. The only thing is, we've sort of had these weird blips with Buehler where he wasn't striking many guys out, in the past, and he's sort of come back from that. I know Nick has talked about his fastball not being the pitch it was as in terms of whiffs recently, but it's been a pretty tough stretch that has sort of driven that value down, and it's not like the results are that bad. He hasn't got more than 5.2 innings in the last three starts and hasn't had more than five strikeouts in any of those starts. That was versus Atlanta, versus Cincinnati, and at Colorado. I know Cincinnati is like, you know, you're like shaking your head like, what? That's but they've been a little bit better. And were a little bit better at the time that they saw Buehler, and the results haven't been that bad. It's not like he's been rocked or anything. I don't think he's given up more than two runs in any of those starts. So you could live with the results, but I think that that's sort of a perfect way to frame it and say, hey, you know, I know Buehler's results aren't good, and yes, I do believe he will bounce back. That's why I'm trying to trade for him, and I think the K's will be there. But you know, you're really struggling for a bat. You know, here's you know, this third round bat, and you know, Patrick Sandoval as a starter to replace him. You know, what do you think? Like, that's the way that I would go about framing an offer for Walker Buehler.
Yeah, another name we have on the list is Carlos Rodon, who, similarly, he hasn't, you know, been on fire the past four starts. You know, early in the season, he was striking out 12 in an outing and then 10 in an outing. And everyone, I mean, even Nick Pollock, it seems like ever since the Cardinals destroyed Rodon and chased him after like three innings, ever since then, he hasn't quite gotten back to the Rodon that he kind of showed and that we all think he could be. Nick Pollock still got him as like a top five, top 10 starting pitcher. I don't have the list right in front of me, but there's an interesting element there of like Rodon's health concerns. And is that an angle? I mean, I know you brought up bat and it seems like you avoid like the challenge type of trades, but is that another angle to kind of take of, you know, maybe a team in like ninth place or kind of on the outside looking in on the playoffs could view Rodon as, if he stays healthy, this could be a guy who I ride to the playoffs. Whereas if Walker Buehler kind of stabilizes me and I'm in third or fourth place, is that something, is that a school of thinking that you would be in favor of?
Yeah, I don't think it's as crazy as like the other trades where it's like bad for bad. I could see this sort of working if you know, because especially with pitchers, like, right, like, all right, I really need K's, like Rodon's gonna help me. I really need to help my whip. Buehler is gonna be better there. Or, you know, at least should be long term. But it's still, I think, tougher to do a trade like that, despite this one making a little bit more sense, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I know you've talked about, like, you don't want to feel like you know, completely won a trade.
Yeah.
You know, it's inevitable. It's going to work out a little bit better for somebody, but you don't want to walk away, you know, with a wry smile saying I fleeced the other guy or anything like that, because it hurts your reputation for future trades. But that one came to mind because actually my brother Ty had Max Scherzer, and early in the season, a little fun fact about Ty is he's never actually won the title in our, like, you know, year 21 league. So we've got names on the trophy and everything, and he's like, man, Rodon, like, he could be a league winner from out of the gate. And it wasn't like a one for one. There were other pieces in there with Rodon. And that's kind of the school of thought of just like, you know, a quote unquote league winner for someone who otherwise might have some like oatmeal-y, you know, aesthetics to them. But yeah.
Yeah. If you're going for it, you're willing to take more of a risk. Like Rodon's definitely more of an injury risk, like less of a track record.
Buxton, same thing.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, if you're in, you know, for Buxton or for Rodon, like if you're in a place where you need to make up a lot of ground in Roto standings or in head to head, like that's a sort of, you know, a good shot that you got to take too. It's like, all right, like I know you're in first place, like Buxton's been sitting and, you know, erratic, like, you know, I'll give you this sort of oatmeal guy for him because I need to take the shot. Like, that's another great way of looking at it. Like, from the opposite.
Yeah, end. Like you're in last place in Mario Kart, and you get the star. You know, you got a lot of sharp turns coming up, but you get the star, and you're just willing to fly off the course if it means you're going for, you know, first place. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a school of thought. Some other names I think are really interesting just because of where they're at. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. with the, you know, ranked 162 in 5x5. It's still great under the hood. The StatCast page lights up red, but it's also Vlad. So someone's going to be really reluctant to part ways with him. Is this even a name that you would go after? Or do you think guys like Vlad Acuna is another one who... so elite, so tough to walk away from. Do you think trades for guys like this are even a good idea or possible? How would you kind of approach a situation like that?
I mean, I sound like a broken record, but like if I had Vlad or if I had Acuna, like I'm still, the cost on him is still pretty much close to draft day cost. Like,
so we got some names here for Vlad. So yeah. Pete Alonso ranked 6th in 5x5. No chance.
I mean, Pete Alonso plus, yeah, Pete Alonso and an arm to help me, absolutely.
Okay,
yeah.
Goldie.
Like, so not no chance that I'm trading him, but like, no, I'm not going to do it for, I didn't draft Goldschmidt with the third pick, like I drafted Vlad. Like, I'm going to want Vlad and, I don't know why this name keeps on coming up, but like Vlad and Ashby, like, or, you know, Pete and Ashby, or, you know, if that's too much, Pete and, you know, a slightly worse starting pitcher, mm-hmm. like that sort of thing.
Okay. So still, but possible.
those are good starting points. Yeah. Those names are very, very good starting points.
Yeah. I mean, the other but ones think, we had listed were, yeah, Goldie's ranked 4th in 5x5. His underlying,
it's also
stats
tough because, like,
if you have Alonso
or Goldschmidt, like, you don't need to trade for Vlad. Like, you don't have to. Like, it's more like, I don't know. Like,
but someone will win that trade, Steve.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
If it's those names, like, it maybe not if you're just going Vlad for like a couple pitchers or something like that. But like, I know what you're saying, that if you have Goldie, you're not looking for a first baseman. But
yeah,
you are if you think Vlad's going to be better the rest of the way.
For sure. Yeah, true. That's true. Yeah
you're so right. You're right. Yeah, I mean, it's just, good point. You know, playing it out. Yeah, I think the other one I wanted to bring up and the final name on the list here was Whit Merrifield, because he's been a head scratcher. We mentioned him earlier, batting just .216 on the season. Similar to Cronenworth, it's like that's what you want from Whit, is the average. So .216 is not cutting it. Yet the StatCast page looks similar to what it always has, and he's pretty much cemented as the leadoff man for KC. Again, it's, you know, this situation's come up in my home league, and I think several managers have tried to trade for Whit, and it's been unsuccessful. It's been talked about in the chat and everything, but this is another name that's underperforming, and, you know, it's not as pricey on draft day as a Vlad or as an Acuna. So I think this is a good one to look at, mainly because it doesn't look like his peripherals have just completely fallen apart. Obviously, it's, you know, it's there's issues happening right now for Whit, but it's coming around a little bit. The .234 BABIP is really holding down his average. He's, you know, typically a .300 BABIP guy. So I think this is a good one to look at. It's just, you know, what the manager's needs would be, you know, if it aligns with your need to kind of stabilize your lineup, assuming Whit will do that. But that was the last one I had on the list of kind of underperformers that I think, if you looked at all trades around fantasy baseball, Whit has to be pretty high of like frustrated managers who aren't getting what they paid for on draft day.
Yeah, the steals are starting to come too. He's up to 7 now. You know, it's a 560 OPS. His career is 757. So, you know, it might be closer to 700, but you could live with that if there's 20 more stolen bases in that profile. And I think there should be. The sprint speed's still in line with where he is, all the way back to 2018. So it's not like, he legitimately lost a step or anything like that. The K rate's still good. The whiff rate's still fine. So, like, yeah, there should be some positive regression there. One of the guys that is severely underperforming, his XBA, is at 272, which is like right in line with where it is for his career. So 274 for his career for XBA. So like this should be, a prototypical Whit Merrifield, kind of probably more of like what the people were selling about, and it might be closer to 8 or 10 home runs than like the 18 or 20 that he's popped in those years where he sort of surprised everybody. But I think he's probably good for hitting 260, 270 the rest of the way with a good amount of steel. So yes, a perfect buy low candidate.
So this might be another one that could fit into like the Gleyber Torres plus a piece.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, Steve, this is, Alyssa's up in Wisconsin at a concert tonight, so I might just, edit the pod, look at every manager's roster in my leagues, and
make yourself a deal.
Yeah, pour a glass of something and just try to get to work over here. But yeah, this is fascinating to hear about. I know my only trade this season was acquiring Rowdy Tellez for Chris Paddock. It was a guy who needed pitching, and he was. It was kind of a waiver, first priority waiver.
But
move,
you know how you got that done, right? Like you saw what that guy needed, and like you're like, hey, like I'm gonna be honest, like I really want to use this waiver priority. Like it's.
I sang you the novel.
You did it. You did exactly what we were sort of talking about there.
Yeah. So themes, be sure to communicate, be above board, a little transparency on why you're interested in the piece. Nothing's worse than being like, oh, come on, this guy's not even that good. It's like, then why are you trying to trade for him?
Yeah, why are you trying to trade for a player if you're trashing? Like, remember, like, this is a relationship. Like, if you make a trade and it works out, and like, or even if you get burnt, like, you're going to do a trade with that person again. Like, it shouldn't be you trying to win this trade, because I'm just never going to do a trade with you again if that's how you're approaching it.
Yeah. I love it, man. Anything else to add on Let's Make a Deal Part 2?
No, man. I love it. It's a yearly tradition, like right around June. Deal time, baby. We'll touch base on this topic. I love talking to you. I love making trades. So,
hey,
right up my wheelhouse.
And anybody tuning in, feel free to fire off any questions we have. Again, our email is winsabovefantasy@gmail.com. Happy to do any trade grading or pass it over to the trade counselor. You guys can find him on Twitter at Stav8818. I'm at Van_verified. And you guys can catch us every Thursday on the Pitcherless Podcast Network and on Twitter at winsabovepod. But that wraps us up. Thanks for tuning in, everybody, and we'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for talking trades with us, guys. Later.